Telegraph Avenue, who's been very vocal opposing the sitting lying ban, to go talk to Marcia Poole in a very, not in a, in a hostile way, but to give her community input. And he was claiming he'd suffered some repercussions in terms of police harassing him at his bumper sticker button stand, which is what he has up there, kind of a literature First Amendment button stand. But more important than these particular cases, which of course are important to the individuals and to us as well, is the question of what do you do to make sure that harassment of youth, homeless people, the poor, the weird, if you will, who choose to sit down and telegraph, and actually in other parts of the city as well, maybe don't have the money to frequent cafes and so forth, but they aren't harassed by police under other guises. The sit ban may have been turned down. Operation AvWatch ended on July 15th, but there is still apparently complaints that police are doing this. And I guess I proposed to you one suggestion was that the police commission itself request that the police department instruct its officers, because of the controversy around this particular issue, to fill out a report every time they issued a citation or had a contact with someone regarding sitting. Since in the past, there has been use of statutes involving furniture on the street to eliminate homeless people back in 1993, since the police went after people even after Proposition was put on hold by the Claudia Wilkin, the federal judge, and even after it was overturned. We have this business of John Vance being picked up in a police car yesterday for informing people that they could sit, lean on the sidewalk against Cody's Bookshop, on the advice of Manuela Albuquerque, the city attorney, who said that was not trespass, according to statements she made several weeks ago. So, has the PRC got any interest in pursuing this? I mean, you talked about getting together a kind of a group of citizens to look into this, because you felt the PRC was pretty much overburdened in terms of subcommittees.
Yeah, that's definitely true. There's a number of ways to go about it. I'm inclined to think that the most effective way to eliminate that kind of behavior on the part of the police is merely political pressure, that it is realized that the community does not tolerate that. In terms of monitoring is always an effective way of doing it. I sort of have discussed with some people, we haven't really worked out the feasibility of having them fill out forms like this. There's some sort of logistical issues with that. But I think the main thing is for people to really keep an eye out. People who are in there, if you see an officer doing something you think is inappropriate, report it, either to the PRC. Obviously, we advocate that. You can also report it to Internal Affairs. And also just to make sure that people are aware of their rights, that it is our job to make sure that people know what they can and can't do, and that laws, that they, have the right not to be penalized for violating laws that don't exist.
Right. We're talking to Claire Zellman of the Berkeley Police Review Commission. Claire, I'd love to talk to you more, but I've got 2 minutes to get to my show.
Now I sympathize with the homeless when I see him on the evening news. Somewhere there must be a place where they can park their weary shoes. Maybe a camp in the country or a building on the edge of town. But that shelter there across the street is only gonna get me down. Everybody should have a home. Everybody must be fed. Everyone has a right to a roof and below it a nice warm bed. We applaud your noble efforts at guarding their collective health, and we'll gladly give you funds and food long as you can put them somewhere else. See, I don't want to have to lock my door to be inside safe and sound. This neighborhood will go to pot with the likes of them around. It's no fun out there in the cold. Yes, I know just how they feel. But I just can't bear to see a hungry face when I'm eating a nice warm meal. Oh, everybody should have a home. Everybody must be fed. Everyone has a right to a roof and the Lord a nice warm bed. We applaud your noble efforts at guarding their collective healths, and we'll gladly give you funds and food long as you can put them somewhere else. I've got a friend who owns a store about a half a block away. Every year she donates goods and money to United Way. But she thinks it's bad for business to have the homeless walking by. She says, why not send them south for the winter so they can stay warm and dry? Oh, everybody should have a home. Everybody must be fed. Everyone has a right to a roof and below it a nice warm bed. We applaud your noble efforts at guarding their collective healths, and we'll gladly give you funds and food long as you can put them somewhere else. Well, now please understand our position. It's not the way it looks. We want them housed, but out of sight. There are zoning laws on the books. Long as we can clear our conscience and preserve our civic pride, we'll give our consent, even pay the rent on a place where they can hide. 'Cause everybody should have a home. Everybody must be fed. Everyone has a right to a roof and below it a nice warm bed. We applaud your noble efforts at guarding their collective healths, and we'll gladly give you funds and food long as you can put them somewhere else. Yes, we'll gladly give you funds and food long as you can put them somewhere else.
And that was Mark Levy from Take Off Your Clothes, one of his albums from the late 80s, still available on disc and on cassette. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. We've got no call-in line for you today, but if you have any comments on the show or questions about what we've put on, or you have anything you want to put on yourself, give me a call at the Huff line, the line for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. You can actually call now and leave me a message, and I'll return your call later or pass on whatever information you have for us. Got a couple of calls yesterday. One call was that there has been some discrimination at New Leaf Market, that apparently people with backpacks are encountering some trouble. But then we got another call from another source that said no, he'd been in there with a backpack and hadn't had any trouble. So what's going on at New Leaf Market? Well, let us know. We'll let you know, and we can then let them know. There shouldn't be discrimination for our folks going into stores because they have backpacks. The whole idea of strip searches when you come into a store is always seemed to me to be a very, very bad idea and bad to submit to. Particularly, however, if it's focusing on homeless people, as is often the case at places like Zanato's, the grocery store downtown, where homeless people and poor people seem a particular target of the security personnel there. So again, 423-HUFF, if you want to put any information out over this show, and we do a twice weekly show here. I do every Sunday 11 o'clock and Thursday at 6. So 423-4833, 423-HUFF. A quick bit of information, Chris Brozda, a sometime homeless activist, sometime angry man, sometime writer, Some of you are listening may know him. Is still in jail, essentially on charges of apparently having a cup of coffee at Marini's Chocolates. I think that's the name of the place. It's the place next to the coffee roasting company downtown, the chocolate shop. He apparently was eating something he'd purchased there, and they didn't like his behavior, but they didn't specify to me when I talked to them what exactly they didn't like. Police came in, claimed he'd closed his eyes while listening to some music, directed him to leave. He left with some resentment, and then candidly told the police officer he wished that he could have a fair fight with the officer at some point in the future, if there were some way to do that, and he did so apparently in a level tone of voice without any kind of abusive language, just as a matter of a straight expression of opinion. And the officer then had him arrested and dragged off in handcuffs from the coffee roasting company to which he'd gone after leaving Marini's. This was actually witnessed by Chris Brosda's father, and Chris's father is a critic. He's not an unthinking supporter of Chris's in every circumstance, and he assures me that Chris's behavior was not particularly abusive. I've also heard that Chris was a little out there in some other respects on that day, that he was perhaps talking to himself and so forth. But again, is this supposed to be a basis for criminal incarceration for weeks on end? That's Chris Brosda's fate at the moment. He's being held in jail on a probation hold. And for all of you considering taking probation, as for example some of you have for minor offenses, let this be a lesson to you. Probation is the basis for denying you a jury trial and getting a swift conviction on whatever they want to convict you on, if they want to do it. You don't get a chance to have a jury trial on subsequent offenses if you are accused of something while you're on probation. It's a very dangerous condition to be in if you're an activist, because activists are frequently accused of violating petty laws so that police can control and suppress protests more easily. Chris Brosda comes up to hearing tomorrow at 8:30 in, I believe it's Department 2. It's Judge Salazar's court, Commissioner Salazar, actually. For those who are interested, I believe it's 8:30. We're not entirely sure of the time. If you're interested in this case, check it out, and I'll hope to be reporting on it in the future. Miguel Balderos, who was jailed, I believe, I'm not quite sure what the charge was, has been released. For those of you who like Mad Dog's, Mad Mike the Wonder Dog's commentaries on Free Radio. Actually, he hasn't been on Free Radio for some time live, but we have some of his old stuff that has been played. Mad Mike is a colorful and outspoken person who, unfortunately, and I say this fully aware of what I'm saying, is also considered to be a thief who's never really made restitution to the individuals who he stole from, specifically activists a year ago, and it had to do with a drug-related problem that he had, but he hasn't come clean on it, and as far as I'm concerned, he has to do that. Much as I appreciate his work and past struggles for against the sleeping ban and so forth, he has to come clean on how he has ripped off essentially his comrades in this situation before he's welcome anywhere where I am, at least in terms of working with him. Although, again, anyone who has a report for this show, whatever I think of their personal life or however I regard their public life, I'll be happy to make it if it's relevant to homeless rights struggles. I don't discriminate there. So, that's what's happening. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, again, 96.3. We have been kind of giving an extensive coverage to the Berkeley Police Review Commission around the issue of the Merchant Police conservative crackdown on Telegraph Avenue, which continues, but which is no longer on the agenda for the City Council. It was voted down 5-4, the sitting ban. However, there is a petition circulating, as you may have heard, in Berkeley to put it on the ballot to force a vote on that. That's coming up. And there is ongoing harassment of activists like John Vance, an advocate for street people, publisher of the People's Bark, also known as the Berkeley Bark, and many broadsides. He's a broadsider himself, just like your very own Bathrobe Spear. Broadsides, that is to say, tracts, public speeches, public pamphlets that he puts out that expose injustice on the Telegraph Avenue streets, particularly regarding this Telegraph Avenue crackdown. Now, after the Police Review Commission on July 1st, I went to talk to council member Chris Worthington of Berkeley, who is the most liberal council member, in fact, the only council member to attend that Police Review Commission meeting. And he has returned my calls and has sought to have some kind of a dialogue on this issue. But for many of us, his response has been quite inadequate. He tries to play the politician, suggesting that the reason he didn't respond to many complaints about the police misconduct on the avenue was because he didn't know the whole story, because he was simply trying to prevent a larger evil, this sitting ban law, from passing. There are some who claim that he was involved in the Operation AvWatch program itself, which, as I remind you, was a program cooked up in the city manager's office, where the mayor, the city manager, and the police chief, and some unknown council members, without a public vote, gave $79,000 to the police department to spend on overtime, very expensive police overtime, to run around giving jaywalking tickets and sort of acting as stormtroopers on Telegraph Avenue in hopes of driving away poor people and kind of busting the street culture the way it's been busted here in Santa Cruz at Cathcart and Pacific, formerly Friendship Corner or Hippie Corner. And Worthington said that he wasn't really involved in this, that he wasn't really consulted. But the significant thing for me was that he didn't really protest until he saw which way the wind was blowing, which is that a lot of people were very angry about it, and then finally he decided weeks and weeks later to get off his duff. Here you hear me interviewing him, or kind of cross-examining him, right after the Police Review Commission hearing, you can get a sense of who's on first, what's up, and whether he's talking straight. You can make your own choice here. City council member here at Berkeley.
Yes, sir.
Couple of questions for you. You heard some criticism here at the hearing, suggesting that it might have been naive of you at best to expect that giving the police and attendant agencies power to clean up the avenue would actually result in cleaning up the avenue instead of sweeping away poor people, youth, and generally harassing people. And in fact, giving the city council more pretext to bring up an anti-sitting law. What's your reaction to that?
Well, I didn't ever support the police cleaning up Telegraph Avenue. What I've supported is Public Works doubling the number of times that they clean the streets and the sidewalks, not scheduled in such a way as to harass people, but scheduled in such a way as to make it so that the street and the sidewalk are clean and attractive to customers, but also to people who happen to sit on it.
Surely, let me ask you this. When did you receive the first complaint from a constituent that the police may have been acting, or the public works, or the animal control, or mental health, or any combination of them, was acting in a fashion that seemed to be aberrant to the objectives that you had in mind when you proposed this? Or supported this? When did you get your first complaints that there were crackdowns and sweeps happening instead of nice, orderly, twice-a-day cleaning?
Well, the police operation is separate from the cleaning operation. They did not start at the same time.
Yet we saw coordinated activity on the videotape between police and the cleaning units.
To some extent, it's good that the city departments coordinate with each other, but not for the purpose of harassing anybody.
When did you receive the first complaints of harassment?
I'm trying to remember.
You don't mean to harass you.
I think it would have been like this.
I mean, I read literature on this issue at least a week before the last PRC meeting, which was a week ago. So I would assume you had received word at least.
I think it was like the 7th, wasn't it, calendar? I think
seventh,
it was like the
7th of June,
17th of June, or something.
When I last spoke to you at the previous PRC meeting,
I don't remember the exact date.
Right, but assumedly it was about a week before the PRC meeting. I notice you're a regular biker up and down Telegraph, right? You frequent the area. You've probably seen John Vance's literature, which is out on the avenue. Daily tracts describing harassment by the police. You probably saw those tracts. And I would imagine you saw those tracts before the last Police Review Commission meeting.
I believe so. So, knowing of this harassment going on, why did you delay coming out publicly against this? And let me put it this way, your answer at the last PLC meeting was you wanted to get in touch with other council members to engage in a joint front rather than a lone cowboy approach with a testosterone backing there, as I remember.
Yes, that is generally my style.
Uh-huh.
And
is your style silence until you can get other people to show up with you?
No, my style is to try to work with all of the progressives and liberals in Berkeley to build a coalition that can win and to defeat these repressive and reactionary proposals like outlawing sitting and lying that are attacking homeless people and young people who are not causing, most of whom are not causing any problems at all.
So when reports of harassment reach you, your response is to remain silent for at least 10 days until you can get some solidarity from the city council. I recall at the last PLC meeting, you specifically said after almost unanimous testimony that harassment happened, I can take no stand on this, I haven't heard the police department's side. That's what you said.
I do attempt to listen to all points of view.
You have an option to call the police department at any time to get the side that they have. Presumably, when you got a complaint of harassment, you could have called that very day and determined what their position was. It seems to me, and I'm acting as an advocate here, disingenuous of you to state that you have to wait on this issue for police input.
I didn't say that I do nothing.
You told me that the last PRC.
I did not say that I do nothing. You said, why am I not making a public speech? And I am not interested in making myself famous by giving speeches. I'm interested in winning votes at city council meetings and getting a majority.
Winning votes and winning elections, perhaps?
If I was interested in winning elections, I would probably be sucking up to the businesses like a significant percentage of the council are doing.
Your district has a significant number of activists as well as businesses. You have to indeed engage both groups, which can be a legitimate aim, certainly. But
I think that if you think that I'm a tool of the businesses, you should read the Chamber of Commerce newsletter, which regularly attacks me, puts me on the front page, and says how I am horrible for Berkeley and that I should be gotten rid of.
My question is why you remain silent for at least 10 days after the first complaints came out.
I have not remained silent. I think that's a total mischaracterization.
What did you say?
Behavior.
What have you said in public about the issue up to this point? What public statements have you made?
I have made public statements repeatedly to anyone who says that there are complaints. First of all, that if it's about the police department, that they should file a complaint with the PRC.
I'm sure Shirley Dean would say exactly the same thing.
Actually, I can't speak for what she would say, but I think that we have to address all of these complaints and that we have to do so. I'm talking as a city official. I'm not talking as a random person.
And there are certain
elected by a group of people in this district
for a very particular purpose. Where you know,
I predetermine the guilt or innocence of a particular person before that information gets presented to me in my role as an elected official. I can be disqualified, and the city attorney has done this to people, from participating in deliberations. Since the city council decides things usually by one vote, if I'm stupid enough to get myself disqualified from consideration of important issues, I consider that to be a way to make myself popular by giving out all kinds of radical rhetoric and making myself ineffective, and that's a counterproductive strategy.
So are you telling me that anyone who comes to you with a complaint of harassment has to wait until the next city council vote to make sure that you don't disqualify yourself, you don't get disqualified before you'll say anything about that issue?
No, if there are specific instances, then we need to document it.
Were there no specific instances 10 days before the last PRC meeting?
I'm saying any complaint needs to be documented, and I have been actively encouraging people.
And that was Councilmember Chris Worthington after the July 1st, 1998 Police Review Commission meeting in Berkeley, defending his both failure to speak out and failure to, as far as I could see, take any specific action regarding the many complaints that were coming into him about harassment on Telegraph Avenue. It's not to say that Worthington isn't frequently a defender of the right position at city council meetings, although there were many of us who grew a little ill listening to Worthington at the city council meeting where the sitting ban was defeated. He did indeed oppose the sitting ban, but when people in the audience hissed, for instance, at outrageous statements, lies, in fact, made by conservatives about the absence of any kind of staff or police testimony showing a need for a sitting ban, he joined Shirley Dean in castigating the audience for hissing, even castigating them for applauding at certain times, telling them they shouldn't applaud, they shouldn't hiss. In fact, this is the only way at a Berkeley City Council meeting for people to really express themselves unless you happen to be one of the 10 lucky winners of the public comment period. Unlike Santa Cruz, Berkeley is much more active, a lot more people want to talk, and they have a big kind of wheel of fortune, a kind of a lottery whereby your name is drawn from a hat, and if you're one of 10 names, you get to talk. Otherwise, if you're one of the other 90 people that put your bids in, or 50 people, or 30 people, you don't get to talk. And the only way you can express yourself is in response to what the council does, with a cry of approval or a cry of disapproval. It's traditional. That's how the Romans used to vote. It's ridiculous to propose people should not be allowed to express themselves in that manner. Anyway, Chris Worthington has got his problems, and I wanted you to see some of those problems and see the kind of difficulties that you get into when you get on the city council, unless your primary allegiance is still to the people that elected you and to the principles that you stood for when you ran for election. It so frequently happens that you deal everything away that one wonders if the very process of running for city council and being elected isn't totally corrupting. People have asked me why I don't run for city council. First, of course, is I'd be bored to death with 90% of the business they do, and I don't feel I have any expertise in it. But really, the primary reason is I don't feel I could speak out as effectively. I think that I myself would be corrupted by that kind of process, and I'm afraid most people are. I suppose it's not inevitably true. There are some exceptions, like Maudel Shariq of Berkeley, the black city council member who's now vice mayor, has continued to speak out. Although I don't know that she spoke out on this Operation Avwatch business, or it wasn't even in her district. So it was in Chris Worthington's district that all this was happening up in Berkeley. Particularly significant that he did not speak out. Well, that's the fate of one city. It's still undergoing the struggle to keep the police off the backs of poor people, of counterculture people on Telegraph Avenue. And it's really an open question. It's really an open struggle. It goes on. And in a way, of course, they're in a more advanced state than we are, because here in Santa Cruz, we lost the legal struggle in 1994, although we were on the streets in great numbers fighting that. The ACLU, American Civil Liberties Union, helped a few people around that, although they wouldn't help activists associated with me, at least Margaret Marr, one of the main civil liberties attorneys, would not. Linda Edwards, for instance, was turned away. She was a famous street activist who Kate Wells defended, Attorney Kate Wells, but that Attorney Margaret Marr would have nothing to do with because she was associated with HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And the sitting law was never really pursued to a higher court, really. I think it reached the appeal level, but that's local, and never got higher than that. Cases have never been taken, and of course the sleeping ban itself, which should have been pursued vigorously, got no further than a minor appeal in the Dan Hopkins case. We've always had attorneys like Bob Tarrin promising to help and never doing anything. It's kind of sad, although, you know, these attorneys are very good in other areas, that they don't keep their commitments in terms of basic civil rights for poor people, the one pressing issue that really many organizations who have previously been silent or pro-city council on this have come around. I mean, the SCAN, Santa Cruz Action Network, the main group that elects city council members in this town, has not only came out in favor of ending the sleeping ban, but of taking action to end the sleeping ban in terms of organizing. And they didn't do what they should have done in terms of really helping us with the sleeping ban repeal, but they did do a few things. Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, the UN Association, Peace and Freedom Party, the Green Party, almost all the local groups have come out against this vicious law that makes it $162 crime to sleep after 11 o'clock at night if you're poor in a city where there is space for maybe 30 of the 500 to 1,500 homeless. And of course, from the Day Center Duchess, Karen Gillette, who now is kind of the queen of the homeless services, having purged all her opponents and her board of directors, we don't hear any comments from her about this law. We never heard any support from her around this issue that I could tell. I never heard a public statement from her. Apparently, she privately may have told one of our activists she favored repealing the ban. But in terms of using her position, which she could have done, which social service providers in other cities have done when the rubber met the road on this struggle, as they did in Santa Barbara, as they did in Eugene, as they're doing in Portland, Oregon, as they're doing in Seattle, Washington, Karen Gillette has done nothing to stand up for the rights of homeless people around this issue. She, of course, I'm sure, sees it as a social services. She's providing the social services to people, let other people deal with the civil rights, which would be okay if she weren't torpedoing all the civil rights people from any kind of involvement and oversight in what's going on at the largest congregation of homeless people, the Homeless Community Resource Center, which is, I guess she sees it as her turf, and that has to be sort of unilaterally ruled by her. I wish we could engage in a creative and productive dialogue and debate on this. It seems, however, that her board is stacked with Downtown Business Association people. She herself favors this downtown Let Them Eat Paper campaign, or did several years ago. And when activist Becky Johnson contacted her by fax and asked for her reactions, she sent back an abusive response, and of course followed by an even more abusive form of behavior in demanding that Johnson be cut off the board, the Combined Citizens Committee for the Homeless Community Resource Center board that is supposed to keep an eye on her. This is the board that for years she would not allow public access to. I tried for years to go to those meetings. They're supposed to be public, but she wouldn't allow that to happen. And now they have to allow public to be partially public because they're having so much public funding. But it's really hard to get information as to what's going on there. And it's a difficult situation for those of us who hate to see splintering going on with homeless activists and service providers. But perhaps that's a necessary thing. Perhaps service providers tend to get in a position where they have a piece of the pie and they have to kind of feel they have to keep preening and pampering the pie givers. I say, give them a pie in the eye. Anyway, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm your host. I'm Bathrobes Pierre. Show goes on till 1:30. I guess what we're going to be following next is, after this brief musical interlude with Phil Oakes, we'll be looking at the Jerry Henry situation. Jerry Henry, activist at the Aptos Shopping Center, who is under attack by First Alarm and the sheriffs for supporting young people, skateboarders, rollerbladers, just hanger-outers at the Aptos Shopping Mall.
In this world where I'll belong when I'm gone, and I won't know the right from the wrong when I'm gone, and you won't find me singing on this song when I'm gone, so I guess I'll have to do it while I'm here. And I won't feel the flood of the time when I'm gone. All the pleasures of love will not be mine when I'm gone. My pen won't pour a lyric line when I'm gone, so I guess I'll have to do it while I'm here. And I won't breathe the bracing air when I'm gone. I can't even worry about my cares when I'm gone. Won't be asked to do my share when I'm gone, so I guess I'll have to do it while I'm here. And I won't be running from the rain when I'm gone, and I can't even suffer from the pain when I'm gone. Can't say who's to praise and who's to blame when I'm gone, so I guess I'll have to do it while I'm here. Won't see the golden of the sun when I'm gone, and the evenings and the mornings will be one when I'm gone. Can't be singing louder than the guns while I'm gone, so I guess I'll have to do it while I'm here. All my days won't be dances of delight when I'm gone, and the sands will be shifting from my sight when I'm gone. Can't add my name into the fight while I'm gone, so I guess I'll have to do it while I'm here. And I won't be laughing at the lies when I'm gone, and I can't question how or when or why when I'm gone. Can't live proud enough to die when I'm gone, so I guess I'll have to do it while I'm here. There's no place in this world where I'll belong when I'm gone, and I won't know the right from the wrong when I'm gone. And you won't find me singing on this song when I'm gone, so I guess I'll have to do it. I guess I'll have to do it. Guess I'll have to do it while I'm here.
The beautiful Phil Oakes, who committed suicide in 1976. But his voice lives and lives and lives. From Tape from California, the song When I'm Gone. So don't commit suicide out there, but turn around and face the folks that are driving people to desperation. Food Not Bombs, one of the groups that's doing that. That's a group that feeds free, healthy, vegetarian food 4 days a week. I think it's four. It used to be four. I think it still is four. They're serving food at 4 o'clock on Wednesdays. I guess it's 3 days a week. And Saturdays at 1 o'clock. They may even be feeding today. They were feeding today. They were doing Saturdays and Sundays and Wednesdays and Thursdays, but it looks like, according to this latest flyer I'm seeing, they've cut back. But they need your help to resume their original schedule. They say in this flyer they're hoping to get a Monday and Thursday meal started soon, waiting for new people to help out. Voicemail for Santa Cruz Food Not Bombs. They need vegetable cutters. They need folks to pick up food. They need folks to serve food. It's 425-3345. 425-3345, or according to this flyer, you can call a real person at 476-4892, 476-4892, and ask for, I think it's Nico, or is it Nico, or is it Nico? Anyway, let's try Nico, see how that works. 476-4892, or just leave a message on their voicemail at 425-3345. Food Not Bombs is not just a charity organization, it's an empowerment organization. Most of the folks doing this are homeless or poor. They're not interested in enrolling you in a social service program. You come, the food they serve you is good food. They're reminding the public that the homeless exist. They feed them in places where you can be seen. They don't try to hide you in soup kitchens in the basement somewhere. They don't run when the police come. They keep feeding, as they're doing today in San Diego. Food Not Bombs, it's not a national or international organization, but there are literally hundreds of Food Not Bombs across this country and even across the world. It's an idea that's international that folks have picked up. They're largely anarchist, which means, for those of you who don't know, not that they throw bombs, no, but rather they believe in self-government. They don't get their funding from the government. They don't get their funding from large foundations. They don't get funding really at all. They just get food donations, and they go cook them in private kitchens, and then they come out and serve people food. And they serve people food at protest demonstrations. They serve people food in areas where the merchants are trying to eliminate homeless people because they think that the city should be for one kind of person, the kind of person with the credit card in their wallet. They distribute literature to help pressure the government to reevaluate its spending priorities. Currently, government spends, according to this, 42% of the national budget, $20,000 every second towards war, but 9% goes for food services and helping people survive that way. So Food Not Bombs, 425-3345. Also, Feed the People, another organization in Santa Cruz to which I direct your attention, run by a number of people, among them Sean Alini, or Shit Kicker Sean, as I call him, currently under attack by the courts, by the police, on charges that I consider to be bogus around drugs and sexual behavior with a minor. Nothing can smear you faster than that kind of charge. And Sean, for a long time, stayed away from them all, but he's come back. And if you want to help Feed the People or feed yourself at his Feed the People operation, it's free, and it's every Monday and Tuesday at 5:30, just down the road from Cathcart and Pacific, in front of Logos Books and the Double Rainbow Cafe area. Sean Alini's Feed the People. If you want to help him, give a call to 425-FEED, 425-3333. I had announced that he had a court hearing coming up on July 31st. That has been postponed. Apparently, there's more negotiations going on. I'll give you his latest court hearing when that comes up. Both these organizations are worthy of your support, Feed the People and Food Not Bombs. And if you have missed these numbers, do give a call to my number, easy to remember, 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F, 423-4833, and I'll repeat them for you at your leisure. Well, as I promised, I'm going to now turn to Jerry Henry and the Aptos Shopping Center situation, which we've been covering in the last few months. Jerry Henry is an older man who's kind of befriended street kids, regards himself as a street minister, and is so regarded by the young people there. I actually talked to a number of them and couldn't find anybody saying a bad thing about Jerry Henry. But the stores around don't like him advising kids of their rights, don't like him being there, and so they've sought stay-away orders. In response, Henry and his attorney, Kate Wells, have sought to stop the merchants from fencing off areas of the Aptos Shopping Center from public use, specifically an area where people used to sit down in front of the liquor store, which had sort of seating area, which has been fenced off for several months. The claim that they have is that they are trying to protect the flowers, trying to put in tile. It's not too clear. We're still looking for answers to that question, why they're fencing off the area, trying to find out the truth of whether Jerry's claims of harassment out there, how accurate they are. We've gotten testimony from different people in the past that hot dog deputies, like Deputy James Thurber, have been ticketing and harassing young women for smoking, for having cigarettes in their possession, for being in the area. We're going to play you about a 20-minute tape of a visit to the Aptos Shopping Center about a week or two ago. With me was video journalist Becky Johnson, who has recently been axed from the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, I understand, so she has more free time. She's been doing some videoing of events happening around people who are really homeless, not just a bunch of poverty pimps who are spending millions of dollars of public money to put up a trailer project where it's illegal to have someone in your room at night and to have any kind of sex, other than, of course, solitary sex or computer sex. I suppose those are okay at Community House. But let's get back to Aptos, and let's see what's going on with Jerry Henry and the Aptos Shopping Center.
So we're here at the Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center in front of, what's the name of the liquor store here?
Rancho Del Mar Liquor.
Rancho Del Mar Liquor is talking to Jerry Henry, and Jerry, it looks like there's a certain area that's been kind of roped off, temporarily closed to all public use, by kind of a orange mesh fence. It's kind of a patio-like area with a long series of planter-like area where people can sit down. Why is this?
According to a police report taken last week, it was put in to stop the juveniles and the adults from loitering on the bench. It's fostered by the liquor store, according to the police report. It's the same thing as the sign over there saying it's illegal for that kid to sit on a railing.
Similar kind of railing over here, I see.
Well, Hank, it's
notice you have green bars that have been set in the middle of the railing, apparently to make it more difficult for people to sit down?
Yeah, most definitely. They've trying to eliminate the human equation and sticking just to the money equation.
Well, money is safer than humans, though. You should know that by now.
Well, I don't know. You know, they got some of these new diseases out. You might be...
Well, I don't discuss that. Would you like a cup of coffee?
No, I don't drink coffee from there. Don't drink coffee from there.
From the coffee roasting company? You've had bad experience with those folks.
I'm not allowed it. I'm not a desirable human being for the business.
Well, some people have some bizarre opinions, Jerry. You can't, there's no accounting for that kind of concern.
Hey, kids have even been turned down if they were getting a glass of water for me. Yeah. Wouldn't want to see 86.
Oh, I have no problem ordering a cup of coffee and being 86 for that reason.
I'll go in there and look at some of the signs they got up in that place.
I think I'll do that.
Yeah, make some real interesting reading and pay attention to sign land as you go through it.
All right, well, I'm going to start reading a few signs into my little machine, and I'll be back.
All right.
Want to look at the papers while I'm gone?
No, I already have those this morning.
All right. So there's a sign here on a post-it down
there. My line here.
So this line right next to the door of the liquor store, which is about, what, 30, 40, 50 feet from the coffee roasting company property, maybe more, is the limit of your legal access area.
Yeah, I can egress through it, but I'm not allowed to stand, sit, linger.
No lingering.
No lingering. Anywhere.
This is because you in essence were...
I tape recorded the manager when he came out one day to verbally accost me.
But you did so in an open manner that did not constitute any violation of the law.
Oh, I always do it in an open manner. Mm-hmm. Just take it out and got it tied onto my shirt. Liquor store. The clerk ripped it off last week, so we got it fixed back up.
Is one of the two clerks in there?
No, one of the other clerks that isn't here right now.
And why did he give up?
He just, he came, I was standing out here by the bench, and he came out and started coming at some of the kids, telling them he was going to call First Alarm and stuff, and I took out my tape recorder, and he grabbed my tape recorder in my arm and started screaming in my tape recorder. Fortunately, I had both hands full. I had an orange juice in one hand, my tape in the other hand, but I survived the attack, semi-intact, tape recorder broken.
Did he pay for it?
No.
Are you taking him to small claims court?
No, we had a hard time getting the sheriff's department to even take a report.
Really? Any witnesses?
No. Oh, there's 7-8 witnesses.
What's the name of the offending tape recorder destroyer?
Robert. He's a clerk at Rancho Liquors.
Rancho Liquors?
Yeah, Rancho Liquors. Lots of names, but they're probably most appropriate. We call this the Ho House over here, the Christian Crank Company. This is Ho Land. This is the Ho House land.
I better best go inside and investigate this phenomenon more closely.
Yeah, there's good reading in there.